Hello and welcome to the Shipping Exchange Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Fisher, and this episode is kindly supported by the Honourable Company of Aston Mariners. Today we're going to be discussing wellness at sea. As seafarers work in some of the most difficult conditions in the world, they often spend months away from their loved ones. With increased workload and operational pressures, these conditions can have a significant impact on seafarers' well-being. In this episode, we'll look at both the importance of wellness and how the industry can support wellness at sea. I'm joined by three guests: Sandra Welch, the CEO of the Sailor Society, Andrew Cowderoy from ZS Wellness, and Kyle James, Deck Officer Cadet. Andrew, let's begin with what wellness is.
Wellness is very much a state of being in good health. Now, this is not just physical health, this is mental health, and very much in this holistic approach as to not one element can be without the other. So every element of physical and mental health is important. We believe very much wellness should be a value that's considered as highly as safety in onboard ships.
And Sandra, the Sailor Society have done a lot of work recently into wellness, and you've done a wellness survey. What did that survey show about wellness within the maritime industry?
I think we did research with about just over 1,000 seafarers, and more than a quarter said that they felt down, depressed or hopeless on several days over the weeks that they were at sea. And so as a result of this, we found that 45% of them had not actually told people why they were feeling like that. So really, our survey showed that almost a quarter of seafarers were suffering from some kind of mental health illness or depression whilst they were at sea. So this is very, very concerning. And for many of them, you know, the pressure becomes absolutely unbearable, and then it leads to absolutely awful things like suicide. So suicide accounts for 6% of seafarers' deaths, which is significantly more if you include suspicious disappearances. In the UK in 2017, less than 1% of deaths were recorded as suicide. So this is something that is really concerning for the industry and something that we really need to address, and why a program like Wellness at Sea is absolutely critical for the industry.
Well, yeah, Andrew, these are quite concerning figures. So
I do have to agree with Sandra. It's a conversation, obviously mental health and well-being and the increased rate of suicide is concerning. Though, Sandra and Graham, correct me if I'm wrong, we as an industry have almost turned a blind eye to elements of suicide, and the monitoring that we have in place, it's very hard to judge actually what the truest picture of mental health and actually more indeed sort of suicide is on board ships around the world. And it's something we're very concerned about as to actually how do we monitor this.
So Kyle, you're coming towards the end of your training now, coming new into the industry. Do you echo maybe some of those concerns raised by Andrew?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that in general in the world now we're becoming a lot more aware of mental health in general. So I think these figures are going to look rather shocking, really, because in general, mental health is becoming a subject that's now at the forefront of most people's ideas. And I think in the industry, it makes sense that maybe there is a slightly higher rate of kind of suicide towards other than the UK, because whereas most jobs in the world, you have that home to go home to, you have that normal person to speak to, you're not surrounded constantly by your work. Whereas on ship, you know, even when you go back to your cabin, every time that phone rings, it's about work.
It's come more to the forefront at the same time that you've begun your career at sea. Do you feel that you were well prepared for life at sea in regards to wellness, not in regards to safety or navigation, for example?
I think, to be completely honest, not really. I can't recall being ever told about the services that are on offer to seafarers, or even if you look at it more specifically to cadets, definitely because you think, in my opinion anyway, that's if we are going to have major problems, I think the highest proportion is going to be within cadets potentially. And I don't think I was ever kind of formally introduced to systems in place. The first time I've heard about a lot of the Sailor Society's projects and the ZS Wellness has been since being asked to come on the show and kind of doing the research myself now. I think there's a lot of focus on the negatives, actually. You know, there's a lot of talk in colleges and things and in general about the bad side of the industry from the very start of people's careers. Let's make them aware of the services available and kind of what to do if you start feeling this way.
I couldn't agree more. And for any of our listeners, if you go onto our website, we have a mental health page that has a whole plethora of resources available there for getting in touch if you want to speak to or reach out to someone.
Yeah, and I think personally for me, this is something that the colleges need to start looking at as well, because at the end of the day, when we are cadets, it's all good saying, you know, the companies have our welfare and stuff in mind. but we're also under the colleges at the end of the day. And, you know, this doesn't happen in university in general. So I study at Plymouth University, which is slightly different to most kind of cadet experiences. And there's a huge focus within the university on mental health. There's mental health workshops and first aid and wellness days and things like this. But then specifically to the navigation courses, it, you know, it's never mentioned.
So it's an interesting point that you raise, Kyle, in regards to responsibilities. Sandra, where do you think the responsibility lies in improving wellness at sea? Is it the colleges? Is it the companies?
I think the important thing to say about wellness programs and in general is that actually they need to be proactive programs. It's all about empowering individuals. So individuals need to take some responsibility for themselves. But absolutely, we need to look at making it mandatory in places, because it actually is all about seafarer safety as well, and ultimately affects the bottom line for shipping companies. So they need to take responsibility for ensuring that they have and they deliver some kind of wellness program that deals with seafarers and prepares them for a life at sea. So we deal with a number of companies where we provide pre-departure training for their seafarers so that they have a good understanding of what they're doing, what they're going to expect while they're at sea, and how they can actually deal with some of the difficulties which they might face there. But we also work with a number of nautical colleges around the world, because it's really important for these young people to know what it is that they are going to face when they go to sea. And, you know, one of our trainers actually delivered some training in Ethiopia, and a load of these guys had never, I think about 100 cadets, they were going to be away from home for weeks at a time, and some of them had never even seen the ocean or a ship. And so we really need to make sure that people are prepared for what it is they're going to be doing for the rest of their life, so that it becomes a rewarding career, not something that is really a painful and negative experience.
Andrew, do you think mandatory wellness training is the solution?
Mandatory wellness training, yeah. To a certain degree, we've got mandatory training for safety on board our vessels. That has been ingrained into the ways that we operate our vessels around the world. Now, these are set by the IMO, and they cover crew on board ship. Now, there's a very interesting element here where are the companies, are the DPAs, the superintendents, and indeed, actually, in some instances, the trainers in nautical colleges and the cadet managers, are they actually necessarily trained to be able to, one, deal with the mental health issues, the physical health issues, but then again, on top of that, actually, how do we relate wellness and safety together? Because they very much go hand in hand. To be able to sort of help the DPAs, help the superintendents understand how integral wellness is to the safe operation of the vessels. Now, whether or not it's mandatory for the crew, that's a different matter, because as Sandra said, there's got to be a certain level of engagement from their part. And as soon as we start to make mandatory wellness training in certain aspects, as sort of physical fitness, could be deemed as, oh, yet this is another mandatory training course. There's a lot of elements here that we need to deal with mandatory training. We can look at an element of, are we preparing our cadets suitably for going on board their first ship? Are they fully aware of actually what life is like on board the vessel? Are they prepared? Have they got the mental resilience to be able to deal with perhaps a bolchy captain who doesn't like British cadets? For there to be a flat out yes or no answer, there is room for absolutely there is mandatory training required. But at the same time, we have to have some optional buy-in from the crew.
It's a question of who receives the training.
That training needs to be looked at in a new kind of conceptual framework as well, which acknowledges the human element as equally important to technical training. It doesn't mean that we're just kind of giving people more training to do and adding to a lot of work that they have, and I take that, because this can actually change and impact people's lives in a huge way, and I think that's what's important. It's not about giving people only technical skills to do something, but this is actually about keeping your staff, reducing the attrition of crew, and actually giving people a quality of work while at sea, and keeping staff and crew morale and those kind of things. So I think there's more to it than just training.
Anything now will improve what we have, because at the minute we have nothing. But I do have to ask the question, whether are we looking at training crew and even DPAs and things, are we maybe a step too early? Because from my experiences personally, if I turned around and I was fully aware of how I could improve my wellness situation on board, from my experiences, I could go to one of my captains or I've worked under, and I generally personally don't think anything would be done about it. Should we maybe be looking more at at a more government level, and let's bring it from the head of the companies down, because there's no point us as seafarers knowing what should be done and what needs to be in place to make it better without the companies then having the ability to support us when we raise them issues.
I think there is a huge responsibility for companies to do it. Otherwise, you, as seafarers, take firefighting training, for example. If you receive this mandatory training ashore, you go on board a ship, but if the ship has no firefighting equipment, what good is that training? You know, it's exactly the same with wellness. You go on board, you need to have the provisions in place, and it's not always the captain's decision on what is purchased. Social things are on board, such as a gym, maybe such as a place, the small things like that, company's responsibility ultimately.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We very much believe that by implementing a wellness solution, such as the ones that we do at the MWI, that we can actually really start to see a far greater crew engagement, far greater crew return, and increased profitability when we look at this at as a bottom line scenario. And onto your note, Graham, on training the masters first and the seafarers first, there's an element of a cross-board training. And we have to approach this as a 2-3-pronged approach. It's vitally important that we bring everybody up at the same time, that we make sure we have this crew engagement. It may not strictly be the same training that's provided from the company, but then on the company side, to be able to help our DPAs, our management, understand the importance of wellness, the importance of safety, and then the framework on board ship to be able to develop that and sort of have the feedback from the ship to the company to say, this is what we need to improve our wellness and hence our safety and the operation of the vessel.
Sandra, I think there's a lot of merit and a lot of evidence to suggest that seafarers will benefit greatly from training, but has the Sailor Society been doing anything with companies to ask them to maybe lead the way in positive change, positive wellness on board?
We have, for example, one of the companies we work with has actually implemented pre-departure training. Others have actually bought licenses for our e-learning program. I think one of the companies has just bought 4,000 licenses for their crew, so they can do the e-learning training whilst they're on board, so to help them engage with wellness. We've even set up crisis response lines where people can phone in to a crisis helpline and get help with somebody, from somebody, a trained counsellor, you know, if they find themselves in difficulty. So not things to do with their contracts and things like that, but when they're actually having, you know, a mental health episode, so that somebody can help them through those things and retain their crew. But I think there are lots of companies out there who are doing really good things. But I think what we need to do is actually do research, or more research, to understand how wellness actually influences the bottom line for each company. Because I think when it comes to the bottom line and how seafarer wellness will affect that, I think people will kind of sit up and take this more seriously.
Are we at risk that mandatory training for seafarers might give companies an excuse to say that the seafarers have been trained, therefore they feel that perhaps they have a lesser responsibility?
No, I don't think so, because I think if people truly understand about wellness and the massive implications it has for crew, then I think, you know, it won't just become a mundane thing that people kind of use as a tick box or something, but it will be something that they really give attention to.
I definitely agree with everything, but I think one of my worries, from what I've experienced from speaking to cadets from Plymouth and other nautical colleges, is the companies that now are, let's say, introducing the pre-departure training and things, these are not the companies that we have to worry about. The companies we have to worry about are the ones that, you know, they're going to look at the mandatory training, but then it doesn't matter how much training you do with the seafarers, that then procedures are not going to be in place. You brought up the firefighting, Graham. You know, there's still companies out there now that, you know, you get to training and you pull out substandard firefighting equipment and everything is bare minimum. So should we be looking at increasing the bare minimum standards of things like what gym equipment needs to be on board? What is the minimum amount of money that should be getting spent on food? And it's the little things, you know, surely we be looking at that and the little things which will actually make the training worthwhile.
In an ideal world, that's great, but that will take the legislative to get behind these changes, perhaps adoption of the MRC code changes there. But even still, we're not even at 100 countries yet which follow the MRC code. So is there not that concern that some ships will have this good training and others won't?
So I think what's really interesting is, we're around this table and generally around the industry, we're very much thinking the traditional ways to make change through the MOC and through similar standards. Now, how have we changed generally as an industry in the past? How have certain procedures and policies been in place? They've been in place through external pressures. So, for example, when we speak to the oil and gas majors, they're very unaware of the risk factors that are in place on board the vessels, for example, in the North Sea offshore fleet. So something we're very much working on is creating a third-party standard within the Maritime Wellness Institute, whereby if we think of a completely different industry, we think of the production of food in South America or South Africa, we've got fair trade, which cares for the well-being of people around the world. Now, what we're doing at the Maritime Wellness Institute is we've created what's called the WellShip Standard, which is supported by ISO 45001, which is an occupational health and safety standard. By creating a standard, by training people up to the certain criteria that we as an institute and industry believe that are suitable, is tying in very much this wellness element into the conversation, that we can start to raise a standard. Now, we look at SAR. To become SAR, you have to pass a certain vetting criteria, much like with Shell. So we're speaking with the oil majors to start to apply an element of pressure from outside by we require a WellShip standard that has to have X, Y, and Z, the correct training in place, and make sure that actually cadets on board ships, crew around the world, are being well cared for.
Some legislation which is out there is intended to set a minimum standard. There are some companies which will do just the minimum as a cost-saving exercise, whereas there are then other companies which will go, you know, above and beyond. We need to raise the minimum standard rather than introduce new standards. I mean, the MLC already talks about
provisions. And I think that's provisions. What my point was kind of to come across. And I understand, you know, that, like I've said, I think any extra training isn't going to cause a problem, because if them good companies do take that into account, then hopefully we will reduce any issues within the industry. And it doesn't matter if they're on the good ships or the bad ships, as long as they're reducing it in general.
So, Sandra, do you think if we train seafarers, companies will then use that as possibly an excuse to say that the seafarers have been trained, therefore they do not have to do as much to protect the wellness of seafarers?
No, I don't think that at all. I think we need to do more research so that companies can understand the effect that wellness has on their bottom line. I think that's absolutely essential. And also to train land-based staff to understand the challenges seafarers face. I really believe this will be beneficial. I don't know if you've seen our Not On My Watch campaign. We have now had more than 2,500 seafarers sign the petition calling to make wellness training mandatory. And so I think it's really important for companies to see that seafarers themselves are calling for this and that they themselves will see the value of it. So when we're doing training as part of our wellness program, we're always evaluating the course and the trainer just to make sure that we're hitting the right spot and, you know, making sure that the training is valuable to seafarers. And actually, in most cases, in most instances, more than 90% are saying that it's something that's valuable for them and that's something that's worthwhile for seafarers to go through.
What do you need from companies to be able to do this research?
Well, I think what we need is for companies to actually put their figures together and see how much it costs when people have a mental health episode or something happens to people physically, that they actually have to re-rig the ship or bring in new members of staff. Once they understand the impact that that has to their bottom line, then I think the small cost of the training that we're talking about, they will be able to then make a very considered decision about what the value of wellness is for them.
Andrew, you think that we need evidence to give companies that push which they need?
We've already got that evidence, Graham. What we're talking about in all the wellness training across the entire industry, in some shape or form, has already been done. The wellness industry globally is worth a $4.2 trillion industry, an industry that is made up of knowledge. Now, we work extremely closely with our wellness professionals from around the UK and globally likewise. And we know for a matter of fact that by implementing a wellness solution, when you tie in productivity, when you tie in tasks that are being carried out in a shore-based environment, companies are seeing a 16-to-1 return on their investment. We know that companies in shore-based environments, certainly in the United States, where corporate well-being is a huge push, that companies are engaging their crew more, or employees more, they're retaining their employees, they're getting more crew engagement, and most certainly you're starting to see a profitable growth, because as soon as we start to engage and invest in our people, that is where we can start to really see productivity and profitable growth throughout the industry.
And this data is based on shoreside industries?
This is based on shoreside industries. So when we start to extrapolate and when we start to look at the commercial risks, when we established ZS Wellness back in 2017, I spoke very closely with a number of shipbrokers who had found that actually people on board their vessels were getting ill, completely preventable illnesses that meant the vessel had to come off charter. Companies were losing off charter up to £500,000 a day. So by simply investing a small amount of money, we can start to see that commercial benefit.
So Andrew, do you think it's as easy as copy-paste from the research which has shown the benefit of wellness in other industries to the maritime, given the nature and the complexities around it?
It's variable, Graham. Now, let's not forget, yes, seafarers are seafarers, but we're all human beings. When we look at the human body, now we know that increased productivity, increased motivation, reduced fatigue, that can be directly tied back to the physical exercise that we do. Now, in a shore-based environment, that could be going down to the gym and doing a whole bunch of bench presses and kettlebells. But however, in shipboard environment, that may not strictly be necessary because you may not necessarily have the equipment in place. Let's tie this back to make this really simple. You don't have to have equipment to increase physical performance. So there are elements that can be transferred, but we need to make sure that we're transferring them in a language that's suitable to seafarers. Because again, what we don't want to do is say, all right, Captain, here you go, you need to do a bit of yoga. I'm pretty sure we all know what the immediate response to that would be. It's tailoring it using the correct language and using some of the technology that's in place, but again, some tradition as well. So for an example, we provide training just before crew join their vessel and as they come back, and we talk about the whole mental health, we talk about the physical performance and how that ties into day-to-day life and the operation and safety on board ships.
So Kyle, we're discussing wellness, but is it really as simple as the equipment? You know, if a crew receives a new PS4 or some gym equipment, or is it more than that? Is it the behind the scenes, what's available if required wellness?
I think from what I've gathered, you're always going to have the big mental health issues. We're never going to get away from that. We're an industry that, you know, some people are away from 9 months of the year, things like that. They're always going to be, unfortunately, the big suicide case, same as in shoreside industries. But I think a majority of the wellness problems on board could be fixed by very, very small things that we keep talking about the bottom line of the company. What's the gym equipment on board of, you know, a 400 meter long container ship? What's gym equipment? It's pennies, you know, and gym equipment, food standards, shore leave, accommodation standards. One of the cabins that I lived in for 6.5 months had a cement floor with chunks taken out of it.
But a lot of this is already covered by legislation. Is it, you thinking it's not enough?
It can't be. From what I've experienced speaking to cadets, even from very good, renowned British companies, it's the contract lengths. It's things that I personally think that little changes and maybe, yes, slightly raising them standards within the legislation could improve quite a lot of the problem, really.
So you mentioned renowned British companies. So you think it's a company issue, not a flag issue? Because that takes away the whole MLC implementation. Because if it's a case of money, that's not flags. That's companies not prepared to pay.
But then you have to look at it also that, you know, because the standards aren't there, like you said with the firefighting equipment, the companies can get away with providing that minimum standard. If we increase them standards, then it kind of all comes hand in hand. If we increase the standards that the flag states and port states are implementing, then the company's going to have to spend that money.
So what I'll touch on a couple of elements, if I may. For ship owners and managers, we are in this unique position where we control the entire life cycle of a human on board. Why in today's society are we still sending crew back worse than when they arrived, when they are increased their BMI, a number that I don't particularly like in the wellness industry, but it's one that's used. We are sending crew back obese. We are in this fantastically unique position where we can actually send our crew back fitter and healthier than when they arrive. Now, coming on to this whole concept on flag, port state and the monetary. Now, if we go down the lines of continuing, let's make an amendment to the MLC. How long do things take at the IMO generally?
Years.
Exactly. So when we come back to how we can start to engage the companies to really make this stand, to improve the nutrition on board the ships, to improve the fitness equipment, to then increase, start to have this extra standard. These are conversations that we need to take away from strictly being in our own industry, strictly going to the HR managers. There are some extremely good forward-thinking HR managers that I speak with regularly that are starting to invest in their people. But this is coming on to actually, let's pull this away from strictly talking shipping with our standard people. Let's talk to the oil majors. Let's talk to the shippers who employ the vessels, because generally speaking, they aren't aware of the standard of living on board their vessel.
What do we say to the cynics? When I have mentioned to a couple of colleagues that we were going to do an episode on wellness, they say, oh, snowflakes, millennials, wimps, you know, you shouldn't be at sea if you're not prepared for the graft, that sort of thing. I mean, Sandra, have you come across any negative backlash from the Not On My Watch campaign?
We've had one or two people who've disagreed with our campaign, which is quite acceptable, and it's always good to hear what people are thinking. But I think that some of the criticism comes because people think we're about making money. And what I want to say straight up is that this program has nothing to do about making money, and the campaign has nothing to do about making money, because we give the program away for free. We give away free e-learning licenses and all those kind of things because actually we want to make a difference to seafarers. We want to prepare them for a life at sea. We want them to take control of their own wellness at sea, because as you say, sometimes companies don't do those things, but seafarers can actually make a difference for themselves. And I think it will take us another few years really before we will gain even greater traction on this. But I think, you know, we've got to continue to prepare people. We've got to continue to give programs away for free, provide training to nautical colleges for free, to do free seminars, and actually just tell more and more people about it. Because I think once people see the value in it for their crew, but also from a financial perspective and the savings that each company can potentially make, then I think, this is something that people will happily adopt.
Andrew, you've done a lot of work, social media side. Now, are you also or receiving maybe some negative comments from people about mandatory wellness training?
We've had some significant backlash, not just on the training, on the fact of where the responsibility starts to lie. We've had some very, very nasty comments. Posting a comment on my own personal Instagram feed, I was an example, which was talking about this mental preparedness, this mental health issue, how we need to make sure that we go out and talk, and certain levels of connectivity. And the backlash was positive and negative. And then again, likewise on LinkedIn, one of my colleagues posted a comment on who's at risk and the potential legal implications of actually not caring for our seafarers. And I've had a lot of personal attacks, a lot of personal comments on the negativity of the team, of the negativity of the company. Why is there this level of negativity? Why are we getting this backlash? Why are we having the old boys coming and say, oh, wellness, it's just this wishy-washy topic that's being done in the big cities drinking green smoothies.
The old boys, would you say that those archaic, perhaps, seafarers of yesterday?
Some of the old boys, but honestly, again, coming back to the social media thing, it's not just the old boys. It's some of the younger generation that are saying, well, just in the traditional senses, man up and deal with it, which is a very negative approach.
Do they have some merit, though, particularly with cadets, which when I was a cadet, or when cadets have spoken to me and they say, oh, I was doing deck work for 3 months, or, you know, I was chipping and painting, like, there is value to it. You might not feel it when you're in the Singaporean heats and you feel you get a bit sunburned, but you are learning about the deck. There is going to be value in later life when you are a chief mate or even a captain.
But if we're telling people to man up, that's again a very prehistoric term. We talk a lot about men. There are a lot of ladies in the industry, and we need to come away from being just this man-up culture. If we start saying man up and deal with it, what we're doing is we're starting to lock people down without that ability to stand up and say, I have a problem. I'm not happy. I'm uncomfortable. And as soon as we start going back down this negative route, yes, there may be merits to this. This is part of the job. But if we tell people to man up and not talk about it, these are the people that could be at risk of taking their own lives in the future. And when we come back to it all, how do we change this mentality? Education, education, education.
We just have to start start promoting wellness and getting people to adopt wellness, not because we don't want people to kind of experience life at sea, but because we don't want to have people taking their life because things become too hard for them. You know, we want people to have a rewarding career at sea, not something which drives them to take their life.
I couldn't agree more. One suicide is one suicide too many. And it ties briefly back on this whole mentality, this whole culture on board. And now correct me if I'm wrong, but it's still very much this man's man. We need to just suck it up and deal with it. And what it starts to come back to is, how do we change this mentality? How do we change this?
And I think a big issue with that is going to be, if we look at British cadet systems, I think that mentality is going to be quite easily changed. Simply because if I go on social media today, and when I was going back into college 4 or 5 years ago, it's currently quite a big thing in the younger generation's culture, wellness. We're starting to look after each other better and things. I think one of the major problems we're going to have, and I think this is a major problem in any implementation of any kind of program within the industry, is a lot of the countries that we're currently at sea with still don't respect LGBT, still don't respect women. And I think this is going to be a huge thing that we have to look at a serious way of how to overcome this problem.
Programs like Wellness at Sea that deal with diversity, so whether it's gender diversity, whether it's cultural diversity, religious diversity, are really important because they cover all of these things. Because let's face it, working on board a ship is a unique social environment. We're never going to find any environment in the workplace that's the same, where you kind of, your whole life revolves around the ship, you live on the ship, you work on the ship, and, you know, if you've had enough of people, you can't just pop off, you know, for a cup of coffee somewhere. And so that's why programs like this that deal with the whole kind of length and breadth of people's kind of multidimensional nature is absolutely important.
We have seen, though, I mean, I have also experienced this, that the discussion on wellness, the discussion on gender balance and mental health from our previous series, it's a very British issue, or it's very much the Western world are leading the way on positive change, but that's not representative of seafaring as a whole. If you are on board a ship and you are the only Brit who's received wellness training or knows what it is, with a multinational crew, with a captain which simply doesn't care, is there for the paycheck, what can you do, you know, particularly as a cadet or even as a junior officer? Maybe even some senior officers wouldn't feel that they could challenge a captain or chief engineer.
Which brings it again, where does the responsibility lie? What you're talking about, Graham, is an individual seafarer going off and completing this element of training, which is fantastic. I totally endorse that ability. But to ensure on these multicultural, these hugely diverse vessels, this is why we believe that it has to come from the top, and not the top of the ship, the top of the organization. So we take an owning, managing organization who has entire control of their entire vessel, that they can implement an element of shore-based training, so they understand the effects, but then likewise, an element of training from the top at the masters, and then throughout the rest of the team, so we all together start to understand these differences and the importance of wellness. And just touching briefly on this whole idea of wellness, and I really need to make this point, is wellness is not a wishy-washy topic. We spoke recently at the HR conference here in London, where thank God we eventually started to put a lid on whether or not wellness is a wishy-washy topic or not, and actually how wellness is so integral, not just to the commercial operation, not just to the human, the crew on board ship, but indeed the safety of crew on board. And where we really want to see this is crew as being a wellness as being a value that is as important, if not more important, than safety.
If it comes from the top and you have senior officers which aren't prepared to the adaption to a wellness environment on board, what's the solution? You know, we often say, you know, change is a part of living. Shell have led with that initiative for quite some time now. But if you have crew which are maybe these, quote, you know, old boys, end quote, if they aren't prepared to adopt it, they're entitled to their opinion. They might have, you know, numerous reasons why they don't believe in wellness training, and more mandatory wellness training for that matter. The solution isn't just to fire them because we disagree. Otherwise, you know, we'd be firing people left, right and centre for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah, but if training is mandatory, whether you agree with them or not, it has to be done. So that's why it's important, because I'm sure that there's other bits of training that people aren't happy with doing, but actually, or even loads of paperwork that and administration that people have to take on. So I think if you make something mandatory, it makes people actually, you know, do that.
So coming back to your question, if we have the quote old boys unquote mentality way of thinking, as part of what we do at the Maritime Wellness Institute, we have an element of the program where encourage continual development. There's two elements. There's what we call a shipboard development plan, which is the basis of actually this is for all the crew to start to engage in, as you say, this is what we want to, and then feedback to the organization for this continual development. What that looks like is trade secret, and it's something that is unique to the vessel, unique to the company. Now, when we start to talk about the whether or not the master believes in training, let's come back to, again, an element of, yes, this has got to be a decision coming from the top down, but the importance, and it is a crucial importance, of training everybody in some shape or form of wellness on board and the importance of it. And then we start to create a wellness culture, and then we start to create wellness ambassadors and accredited wellship managers throughout the organization. We're not going to necessarily get everybody, but we can certainly try.
And I think actually what you just ended with there is maybe something that can actually be beneficial as well, is having a representative in the company who is, let's say, in charge of wellness. So maybe you don't have to go to the master. A big example, my last ship, we had two masters. Halfway through my contract, they changed. The first one, I'd be happy enough, no problem. If I had an issue, I could go to him. And I genuinely believe that it would have gone to the company through the DPA and would have followed tracks. The second master, he was slightly older, slightly more kind of, I think his original training was kind of military style. And I think it would have been, if I had a genuine issue, I wouldn't have gone to him.
So you bring a very, very good comment, and I would certainly want to pick up on it. And it's where we can start to learn from other industries. At a number of events, we had somebody come in from Virgin Atlantic on board their aircraft. They wear a little badge. Now, this is more around the mental health side. On some of the badges, there's a slightly different color, which shows the crew that that's the person that I talk to if there's an issue. So it's not the captain, it's not necessarily even the senior cabin manager, it's somebody inside the organization that you can start to approach. And it's a fantastic idea to have that representative from not strictly the leadership position.
One thing which, when I was on board, I got in touch with our HR department with CK and said that it would be a fantastic idea to have, the same as you have onboard safety officers, have an onboard welfare officer who perhaps wasn't responsible for, you know, counselling or anything like that, but had received some form of well-being and wellness training and was also then responsible for organising social events, ensuring there's a positive atmosphere on board, maybe having some access to the welfare fund for what the crew would like, and then also being the person who has the answers in regards to who can they speak to or what's available in the next port if they need to get off and see someone.
I think the issue you have with that, and I think that kind of idea is a good one, but taken from my own perspective, DSTOs, a part of a chief officer's role is training cadets. From my experiences, that's not always done. So is having a seafarer, let's say the second officer, because he's medical, so let's put him with wellness as well, is he actually going to carry out that role?
It should be voluntary. It should be someone should put their hand up and say, I'll do it, if they believe in the cause. Because I think if you have an individual which is passionate about it, like we are around the table, we would all do it.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm trying to get to. But I think they're definitely should also be that kind of DPA for wellness type thing, that kind of person ashore to always come back to if there's something that maybe you don't actually want to bring up on ship and you want to sign off and deal with it that way.
Which brings me, fantastic, I'm so, so pleased you brought that up, is we actually, as part of the Maritime Wellness Institute, we have specific training for DPA superintendents, what we call our Wellness and Safety Certificate of Competency, to make sure that we are bringing the DPAs up to a standard where actually they understand the importance of wellness, both mental and physical, not only how that affects day-to-day life, but actually how that affects the commercial operation and the safety on board ship. So it is a person that you can go to who not only operates the ship as a DPA superintendent, but they actually also understand the crucially importance of wellness and being that person at the end of the telephone where I can pick it up and say, mate, I've got a bigger problem, can you help me out?
And I think this is where I tried to come to earlier on, where seafarer training is going to be a really important part of this. But maybe we should be looking at that level of management training before. Because then there's no point to seafarer being aware of an issue and how to fix it if he then has no one within the organisation of the company to actually put that implementation into place.
Let's talk about the next generation then of seafarers, and we will be, you know, one day we'll be the old boys, but at least we'll have that inkling of how important wellness is. Kyle, you mentioned about Plymouth having leadership and management training.
With Plymouth, it is a slightly different structure. And maybe this is something that maybe we need to look into, that actually the college structure doesn't support wellness training either, because it's traditional. It hasn't changed. Nothing's been overhauled. You look, it's out in Manhattan already. Plymouth is starting to teach in a university standard. And Southampton, I understand, Wasatch has now gone on to the Southampton University campus, and maybe that will start to change. I think a big thing in Plymouth is there's the kind of psychology department, I think, which run first aid, mental health first aid courses and things like this. But I definitely agree that let's hit it at cadets. Let's, at the cadet level, instill a way of being an officer of the watch or an engineering officer that, as we've tried to mention, everything we're doing always links back to that. Okay, how are the crew going to feel about this? If I implement this structure, can we do it? Can we look at watchkeeping systems to allow for more shore leave time? The generation change will hopefully make a big effect as well.
So, Andrew, do we need to start thinking about wellness when we think about safety? I don't identify that they are the same thing.
Without a shadow of a doubt, Graham. Well, wellness and safety, we strongly believe, are integral to each other. We take any scenario on board a vessel and we put over the human performance factors on how we perform as a human being. They can tie directly into the safe operation of a vessel. Now, there's a couple of examples that we can use here, and how that does come together is if we have a captain who's been at sea for 20 plus years and he's just had a telephone from home saying, "Honey, I've had enough, I'm going to have a divorce." He steps onto the bridge, he steps onto a DPA desk. Where's his mind? His mind is not, "Am I going to keep this vessel 8 meters off the rig?" His mind's not, "Oh, is there a ship coming across the starboard or port side that's going to potentially have a collision risk?" His mind's back home, he's fuming, he's angry. And actually, you know what? He may, at a flipped point, what we know is going on inside his head is he's reverting down to what we call reptile mode, which is fight or flight, where accidents happen, where there's no perceived other option. He could be in the position to say, "You know what? I've had enough. And we've seen it in the airline industry. I want to take my own life. And how am I going to do that in this moment in time? I'm going to use the ship to do that." There's other examples in terms of operation on a day-to-day basis. Attentiveness, alertness on the bridge, the whole plethora of instances how human performance can directly affect safety. So in answer to your question, yes, wellness and safety are the same thing. And we believe strongly that wellness should be a value as important built into your organization as safety is.
I think that brings us to the end of a fascinating discussion on wellness. Thank you all for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Graham.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the show, and we really hope you enjoyed it. It would be great if you could leave us a comment below. And special thanks to the Honourable Company of Master Mariners for their support. You can find us on social media and visit www.theshippingexchange.co.uk for more information. Until next time, bye bye.